Today's episode of Real Ghost Stories Online is supported by SelfDefenseProductDepot.com. Give yourself or someone you love an extra level of protection with non-lethal protection products from SelfDefenseProductDepot.com.
Welcome to Real Ghost Stories Online. Call in your Real Ghost Story now at 855-853-4802. Or write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. You are about to enter the world of the unknown, and quite possibly, the undead. This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
That indeed it is. Tony and Jenny Brewski joining you once again. And how are you this fine day?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm ready to hear some ghost stories.
Okay.
I am.
I think we can do that.
I have been eagerly anticipating hearing the calls today. Of course, our phone number here is 855-853-4802 to share your real ghost stories with us. You can also write it on the website, realghoststoriesonline.com. So lots of ways for you to get those stories to us. And of course, if you enjoy the show and you want more episodes and you want to help keep this thing on the air, please consider becoming an EPP, extra podcast person, by signing up on the website, realghoststoriesonline.com. Click become an EPP, get access to all 60-some those extra bonus episodes, and there's lots of good ones there. Open lines today on Real Ghost Stories Online, so let's get right to that and go to our first caller at 855-853-4802. Hi.
Hello, my name is Savannah, and I am calling to tell you my story. I'm kind of in the middle of it, so it's still really overwhelming for me, and I know that you say people say this all the time, but I am kind of a skeptic. I just don't have any explanation for what's been going on. So this all started when I was younger. I moved to a new neighborhood with my family, and there was a neighborhood boy a few years older than me who started stalking me. He got kind of obsessed with me and would call all the time, and then so we, you know, had to tell him to leave me alone, and he wouldn't, and escalated, you know, into breaking into our house and death threats when I wouldn't talk to him. And it was really scary and traumatic for a lot of my childhood, junior high up through high school basically, and it was escalating until one day he showed up while I was in our house, had a pool, in the backyard pool, and essentially tried to drown me in it. And luckily my older brother was home and he heard and came down and stopped him. So then of course we called the police, and he was, because they wouldn't do anything up until then, you know, stalking is really hard. It's just, that's a whole other issue. But he ended up getting charged with attempted murder, and I had to testify in his trial, which was one of the most traumatic things I've ever gone through. And he ended up going to jail. Okay. So that was an awful thing, but I've put it behind me and I moved on with my life. I'm 6 years older than when that happened, and I don't live in the same state, and I just was happy to get away from there. Okay, so 2 weeks ago, I was taking a shower. I live by myself, no pets, nothing. And I started smelling, the water was smelling like weirdly chemical. And this has never happened before, and I've lived here a while. And I was like, oh, that's strange. So I turned it off to get out. And I was like, man, I know that smell, you know, what is it? And then I realized it smelled just like the pool we used to have. It smells like chlorine. That's weird. So I just figured that something was going on with the water treatment or something. I don't know. So I got out of the shower, and there was, as I'm combing my hair out, I see a heart in the steam in my bathroom on the mirror. And I basically, I mused, you know, I had dealt with people breaking into my house, this kid. So I, you know, freaked out, and I'm embarrassed to say how freaked out and checked all my doors, windows, you know, immediately called my family. They're all locked. Nothing's going on. So I'm like, okay, that's weird. Okay, so then for the past 2 weeks, randomly around my house, I will find puddles of water. Not like giant, but standing water in places where that are not near a faucet. The roof is not leaking. There's no nothing. And I'm like, that. I have no pets. I'm like, this is, sorry, it's really upsetting. And I don't know. Again, I live alone. I cannot for the life of me figure out, you know, what's going on. So then the reason that I found your website and this podcast and everything was yesterday I got a phone call from my mom, who still lives in the town that, you know, all this stuff happened to me in. And she told me that the boy who stalked me and was serving time in prison had been killed in prison about 2 weeks ago. And basically now, I mean, I'm trying to think of a rational explanation for why all these things happen, and maybe it's just a crazy coincidence, but I am absolutely petrified and I don't know what to do. I don't know anything about this stuff. And I'm just feeling like he's not left me alone, and he's mad at me for sending him to jail. And I feel like, I don't know, I'm just absolutely terrified. So any advice that you can give me, I mean, I sent him to jail, but I didn't do anything to him. I was just trying to protect myself, but now I'm absolutely terrified about what's going to happen. Anyway, hopefully you guys can give me advice. I'm really at the end of my rope, and I don't know what else to do. Anyway, all right, thanks, everyone. Bye.
Wow.
So instead of feeling, and this is going to sound awful, but instead of feeling the relief of knowing your perpetrator is never going to get out and bother you again, he's bothering you from the other side.
That's almost... I don't know if it's worse or not. I mean, it really depends how much power this thing is going to have as a ghost. If indeed it is him and it's not something else taking that image because it knows it's frightening, it's a frightening thought to her.
Sure.
What can you do? That's a good question.
Yeah.
That's a very good question. I mean, there's lots of things where... you know, people, you know, blessings have been done. There's different things you can attempt, depending on how bad this gets and how serious it becomes. Well, it's good to know he's not out of prison and they don't know where the hell he is.
Sure.
Because then you'd almost go to thinking, oh, it's him. You know, he's screwing with her water. And he's breaking into her home. But it doesn't sound like that's the case at all. It sounds like there's something paranormal going on here. What do you guys think she should do? Because honestly, I don't have a lot of advice for you, and I'm sorry.
Yeah.
It's one of those things where when you have something like this, it sounds like it probably will be more than just, please leave me alone.
Yeah, and sometimes the only thing we can do to help is open it up to everybody that listens to weigh in on that.
And then you get a plethora. It's like a choose your own adventure at that point.
Remember
trying. The old books, you know?
Yeah.
Turn to page 72. So once you weigh in on this on the forum, everybody, and give some thoughts and advice for this specific situation, you can do that on our website, realghoststoriesonline.com. Click on the forum section. And hopefully we can get some ideas for you. But that just sounds terrifying. Wow. That is like something out of a horror movie.
Oh, yeah.
Stalked in death. Ugh, that's creepy. Very creepy. Thank you for sharing it, your experience and your story with us. The phone number, of course, 855-853-4802 to share your real ghost story with us. Let's go to a Canadian. You like that?
Just
a Canadian. No, it's Nikki in Canada. Hi, let's hear your story.
Hello, my name is Nikki from Vancouver, Canada. I have a few stories that I would like to say, but this one in particular is a very touchy one. when I was about 18, when I got moved out to my apartment, because I have a physical disability, and my parents wanted to move up to the wilderness up on a lake. Well, I didn't want to go up there, so I moved into an apartment that was down in Vancouver, and it was fully equipped for me being disabled. Well, besides that, being unable to walk, it didn't stop me from doing things. I was given a car from my grandparents. It was a 1972 Buick Skylark. Beautiful green car. It was well taken care of by my grandma and my grandfather. This car was probably not used, but it was used by my grandma. I'm going from Lethbridge to Vancouver, and then from Vancouver down to Birch Bay, continuously. I remember even still that my grandma would drive my sister and I to Birch Bay in this almost year. At the time, all of that history goes into this little car, well, big car if you want to call it. It had a big engine. I kept it just immaculate. Even at sometimes I would stay up all night just cleaning it because I loved this car so much. But it was a gift from my grandma. My grandma died of Alzheimer's, but she was so supportive of me and my grandparents. Both of them were very supportive. But in particular, my grandma was very protective of me. Well, you know, about 2:30 in the morning, like usual, I'm in the garage, underground parking. And I'm starting the car up and got it warming up. Now, I have to use hand controls because I'm in a wheelchair. Well, just so happened to happen, I was sitting from the wheelchair to the car and I slipped and I fell into the steering column, which will then engage the engine. And I fell underneath the car. Now, the car is a very large car, 1972 Buick Skylark. I fell underneath, and then the car started to drive over top of me. Now, I'm on my back, then all of a sudden, I'm sitting upright, then suddenly I got underneath the back wheel as it was coming up to me. And now the one thing about this car, it never stalled. It never had issues because I kept this thing immaculate. Now, I don't know what happened, and no, for no reason at all, I was getting pulled right underneath the wheel, and for no reason, the car stalled. Yes, stalled, dead, like something actually physically pushed it. Well, the funny thing is, I was all by myself, nobody around. And as his car was rolling up onto my back and about to crush my neck, this happened. But tell me, was my grandma watching out for me? Or was my grandfather looking out for me? That's a question I have. Aside from the odd touching on my elbow, nothing else really happened. The touching of my elbows from another thing that I would call back later and tell you about. It involves living in Japan. As a disabled person, I never let things stop me, even flying away a million thousand miles away. But anyways, I hope you enjoyed that spooky tale. I love your show. I hope to be an EPP one day. I moment right now, I'm a little short on fun. I'm just getting back to work after a heart attack and a rough bout with a stomach issue. I love your show, and thank you for your time. And I love this outlet because people have a place they can express and say, this happened to me. And I hope my little ghost story, my haunted car, comes out. Maybe I should also tell you when I quote, sold the car. 3 weeks after, it unexpectedly came out of park and crashed and is now written off. And trust me.
There you go.
Well, I don't know if it was your grandmother or your grandfather, but somebody was looking out for you that day for sure.
Especially if that car never had like a history of doing things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's certainly something good that intervened.
Right.
In that situation. Thank you for sharing that experience with us. I'm still stuck on our first story.
You are?
In my mind, that was just such a creepy, horrible thing to have to go through.
Oh, sure.
But still, I mean, it you know, when you're looking at it from the, you know, hey, tell me a ghost story. That's a good ghost story.
Mm-hmm.
That is a very, very creepy ghost story. So thank you for sharing that. It's one of those things where, you know, having some protection products around, I mean, it's not going to, you know, keep the dead away, but probably wouldn't be bad to have for the crazy living people who are out there, because they certainly exist. And that's not always the best case to be in and have nothing to keep yourself safe. The breaking of a window pane, the sight, the sound of someone being assaulted, not sights and sounds anyone would want to experience. Maybe you've been in a dangerous situation yourself. If so, give yourself or someone you care about an extra level of protection with non-lethal protection products from selfdefenseproductsdepot.com. That's selfdefenseproducts with an S, depot.com, your ultimate online security store. At Self Defense Products Depot, you can choose from a large assortment of defensive products to fit to everyone's need and everyday needs: stun guns, pepper sprays, personal alarms, home protection, surveillance systems, hidden cameras, and more. Crime is an everyday occurrence in this world, and at selfdefenseproductsdepot.com, you can find the level of protection that you need at affordable prices. Plus, at selfdefenseproductsdepot.com, when you visit there, you can register for a free gift right now. So check that out. That's for a limited time. So provide yourself or someone you love with an extra level of protection, the safe and non-lethal way. Get that extra level of protection from selfdefenseproductsdepot.com. Some rules and restrictions may apply. So check that out. On with our calls for today. 855-853-4802 is our phone number here at Real Ghost Stories Online. Let's go to Christy in MD. Is that Maryland?
Yes.
I'm not good at the M's. I get confused sometimes. There's certain ones where it's like MD. Anyhow, Christy, hi.
Hi, Tony. Hi, Jen. This is Christy calling from Maryland. I'm a longtime listener. Recently just became a EPP, and I've never actually called in, so I just kind of thought I should start contributing to the show since I've been binge listening for like the last year or so. My story is actually a Halloween story, so I wanted to call in this time of year, being that Halloween's just a couple days away. My grandfather passed away about 20 years ago, 1995, and the Halloween following his passing, my grandmother's home was vandalized on Halloween night. And so the following year, it kind of became a tradition where I would come over, and my dad would come over and other family members to hand out candy and just kind of give the presence that my grandmother doesn't live alone, and her home has never been vandalized since then. Well, my actual story starts about 8 years ago when I was over. I was in my 20s. I was with my dad and my uncle, and we were handing out candy. And my grandmother's driveway is pretty long, and it's up a hill. It's about four cars long and two cars wide. And we all kind of park our cars in one long strip over on the far side of the driveway to give the kids and adults room to come up the driveway to knock on the door. And the where we sit next to the driveway, it's like a glass sliding doors and a den, and so you have a pretty good view of the driveway, the people walking by up the street and up the driveway. Well, I was sitting on the couch, and I see a kid coming up the driveway, and I see other kids at the end of the driveway starting to come up, and I grab the little basket of candy and I go to the door. Well, that kid's not there, and the other kids come up, and I say, where's your friend? And they just kind of look at me like, I don't know. and, you know, they take their candy and leave. And I told my dad, I said, I saw this kid come up, and then he disappeared. And my dad kind of got worried and thought maybe he went to another door to the house, and he walked around the property and couldn't find him. And we just kind of shrugged it off as, you know, that's odd. And the following year, I see this kid again. Same costume. It was a green and red costume, and I couldn't quite make it out, but I kind of contributed it to like a Robin from a Batman and Robin costume. And he comes up the driveway, and he gets to my car door, and just disappears. And I saw this with my own eyes. I watched the whole thing. It wasn't like I saw it out of the corner of my eye. And I just thought, you know, that's really strange. I don't know if it could have been a reflection, but because of the way the driveway is shaped, I don't think it could have been a reflection from the street and more uphill from the street. So I don't know how that would have happened. But and I saw it again the following year, this kid coming up the driveway, and then he's gone. And the next year, I'm talking about it with friends, and like, you know, you should try to, you know, record this and sit and watch and watch for him. So, you know, that's what I did. I didn't have like a regular video recorder, but I did have my phone that can capture video if I'm ready and I know what I'm going to record. Well, of course, you know, it's like watching a pot boil. Nothing ever happens when you sit there and watch for it. So that Halloween, I never saw it. The following Halloween, sitting there again, watching television, got the curtains open, and handing out candy, everything's going normal, and I see the kid again coming up the driveway, and he just vanishes. I have no explanation for it. I don't know that it is a kid or spirit or what have you. I don't know what things are or aren't, but it's just odd. You know, could it be just the energy of the night with all the children running around and the festivities? You know, I don't know. But anyway, that's my Halloween story. Happy Halloween, and thank you.
That is a very, very creepy thing to see and experience on Halloween. You know, it makes you think about, okay, if this is a ghost child that's doing this on Halloween, you know, is it a conscious entity? Is it something where it's, you know, just residual energy? I don't know. I would have to say if in death you have the ability to decide what age you're at, what you're going to do, I would certainly, if I could, for one night, be able to go back to being, you know, an 8-year-old and go trick-or-treating, I would definitely, definitely do that. Because that's one of those nights where we have so many fond, fond memories, at least in my world, I do. And I would certainly pick that night to relive over and over. If that's something we have the ability to do in death, I don't know that we do or not. It may have just been the ghost of a child who had passed at some point and is still out being a child. Oftentimes we do hear stories of children who pass and they still tend to do very childlike things. And if you have to consider, you know, trick-or-treating as being one of those childlike things to do. So if they're really enjoy that, I would see or not be all that surprised if that is an event that's replaying, that they're redoing every year as a ghost. It's funny, just this last Halloween, when we were getting the girls ready to go trick-or-treating, me and my cousin, who he lives in Wisconsin, and I'm down here. I hardly ever see him anymore, but so many memories with him for trick-or-treating as a kid. We were texting that day back and forth the pictures of our kids, you know, trick-or-treating and just kind of reliving some of those memories. It was a real fun thing to do. Let's go over to another caller in Canada today. Hi.
Hey, Tony and Jenny. It's really nice to be able to speak on your guys' show. My name is Nadeem Ali, and I'm actually from Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. So the story that I wanted to share with you guys is one thing that happened to me about 8 years ago. It was basically in the Islamic tradition, after somebody passes away, you do a special prayer for someone after they have passed away. And it was approximately 1 year afterwards, which is usually the normal time to do it. So actually, I had an uncle who had passed, and he was very ill at the time of his passing. He had several medical issues, several different things were going wrong, and he had passed away in 2006. So fast forward a year later to 2007, when his eldest son, my cousin actually, was holding the prayer at his house. And I think the evening started at about 6 o'clock. I'm actually a musician, so I was unable to make it right on time. I had actually showed up like a couple hours late because I was playing a gig that night. So I had done so, and I came, out of the place where I was playing my gig, and then I drove to my cousin's house, who was holding the prayer. And you know, we all sort of were just sitting around, and the prayer was pretty much over. I had missed it. But just sort of reminiscing about, you know, who he was as a person, and you know, how he was very friendly and very kind. He loved children. He was just a very kind, sweethearted man. He didn't have, I guess, like the best quality of life. He had always had, you know, health issues and money issues and stuff like that. So, you know, it was definitely hard for him and his family. So, you know, after, you know, an hour or two of sitting around, I get a phone call from my house. So the place that I was living, which is about a 20-minute drive away from my cousin's place. It was kind of strange because it said, I'm getting a phone call from home. But I knew for certain that there was actually nobody at home at that moment, because I had been out playing a gig, and actually my parents, who I had lived with at that time, were out of the country doing like a religious pilgrimage in Saudi Arabia. And so I found it kind of strange. So I was thinking perhaps, you know, one of my sisters had stopped by and was phoning to see where I was, or something like that. So I answered my phone and I said hello, and there was no reply. There was nothing, not even a sound. And then all I heard was sort of like this raspy, just sort of distressed breathing, and it didn't make any sense. And I thought it was someone, you know, on the other end, and it was just very, very low and very grumbly. Like in the medical world, it's called Kussmaul's breathing, and which basically means that, you know, it's the way a person breathes basically before, you know, they're about to pass away. It's very weak, very strained, very like low and grumbly. And that kind of freaked me out a little bit, because after I had hung up, you know, we were kind of sitting around and my family members were asking me, you know, who was that? Like, why did you keep on saying hello? Why was there no reply or anything like that? And I basically said that, you know, I just got a phone call from home. I'm pretty sure I locked up all the doors. I checked and I double checked to make sure, you know, that was done. And we all started to sort of freak out because we knew that no one was at home at the moment. So naturally, the thing that we thought was, you know, someone had, you know, broken and entered into the house, or, and I don't know, mistakenly made like a phone call to me or something like that. So, you know, we all started to freak out a little bit. So everybody got into their cars. There was about, you know, 10 people, me, my sisters, my brother-in-laws, their children, my cousin and his family. We drove about 20 minutes back to my place, and we checked around the perimeter of the house. There was no sign of any sort of, you know, breakage or damage or anything like that. And so that started to kind of, you know, freak us out a little bit more. So all of us, I opened my garage door, we all grabbed something, you know, a crowbar or like a knife or like whatever anyone could grab, they grabbed, and we went into the house. And sure enough, you know, the house was locked. Everything was as it was as I had left before playing my gig. You know, at this time it was about 2 a.m. So, you know, everyone, we scoured the house top to bottom, attic to basement, you know, every closet, every room, every you know, shower, everything. It's a pretty big house. It's a four-level split, so there's a lot of places to check or for intruders to potentially hide. You know, we looked, and there was nothing there. And so after a while, we sort of sat there and wondered what that could have been. And so I pulled up my cell phone again, and sure enough, there was a record of the exact same time that I answered my phone, having a phone call from home. And then I actually even phoned my local phone company and asked as to whether or not, you know, a transmission was sent from our residential home to my cell phone. And yep, she was able to confirm it. So, you know, it was really eerie because of the breathing, and it was just really freaky. And so a lot of us, you know, sort of maybe hypothesized that, you know, it was my passed away uncle who was trying to communicate with me or us in some way, but I guess wasn't able to, because, you know, all I heard was the raspy sort of breathing. And it's a very distinct sort of sound. I'm actually a medical student right now, and so that's definitely a very characteristic breathing pattern that you hear in a stethoscope when you know, someone's about to pass away. So it was just really eerie, and I slept actually I crashed at my sister's place that night because it was very, very eerie, and we were just all sort of taken by surprise and freaked out. But yeah, so that is my paranormal experience, and thank you once very much for listening, and I enjoy the show very much once again. Thank you. Bye.
I think what's scarier than just getting a phone call from a place where it's pretty much impossible to get a phone call from is to hear breathing on the other end, to know that something has called you. It's not just a malfunction.
And they're there.
Mm-hmm.
They're there, and they're aware that you are hearing them.
Mm-hmm.
And they're hearing you as well.
Right.
That's very, very, very creepy. I wonder about this because we've talked about this before, and I wonder if we get any stories or calls from individuals who work for phone companies of how often they have things like this where it's proven like, no, I got this call from this number, and there's no record of it, or they can't figure out how it got from point A to point B.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where people go and inquire about these, you know, odd paranormal calls, how often they get that that request.
Yeah.
Or have to investigate something like that.
That would be really interesting to hear from somebody
that
works there.
And you can do it. I mean, I'm sure it's probably in a private matter, so you can't. We don't need names or cities or anything like that. But, you know, you could probably share that sort of information by omitting some of those things, and we can still get the gist of the story.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have anything like that, we'd love to hear it. You can write in or call in, of course, the phone number here. 855-853-4802 to share your real ghost story with us. Hi.
Hi. So I don't know if this can officially be considered a ghost story or not. I'm a skeptic, and I usually chalk it up to an over-imaginative mind or sleep paralysis, but I'm going to tell it anyway. So I had this stuffed animal when I was little. It was given to me by my father. It was his before it was mine. When it came to me, it was in pretty good condition. The fur was still on. When I got done with it, there was no fur, except for in the folds of its ears. I just loved it to death. It was patched many times by mom and my grandma. And I named the stuffed animal Emily. And the reason I did that is because I named it after this memory I had. I had this memory of me on a playground running around one of those, I'm not sure what the name for them is, but those like those metal discs on the ground with handlebars, and you run around them and then get them going fast, and then you jump on them and get dizzy. I was running around one of those, and she was in front of me. I was holding the handlebars, and she was holding the handlebars in front of me. And that was Emily. That's the only memory I have of this person called Emily, who I named my dear stuffed animal after. The weird thing about that is that she was wearing my dress. I had this one good dress, red. It had like the big puff sleeves and a kind of like puffy skirt, and it was you know, the hem around the bottom and around the sleeve, and the sleeves, they were lined in lace, and it was just like so itchy, and I hated this dress, but my mom would put me in it all the time, and she was wearing that same dress, but she didn't look like me. Her hair was brown and straight and pulled back in a ponytail, and mine is blonde and kind of like wavy curly. And the thing is, in the memory, I don't really see her face. I see it in profile for a second, and that's the only memory I have of her. But flash forward to many years later, my parents got pregnant with my youngest brother. He's almost 13 years younger than I am. And I was moved down to the bedroom in the basement. It's our house is on a hill, so my bedroom had one wall that was not underground, so it had windows. You know, I had a windows on one wall, so bedroom. So I moved down there, and in that bedroom, I always had this creepy feeling about the wall along the side that abutted the back of the basement. And I say the back of the basement, and technically maybe it wasn't. The basement was in kind of like a U shape. And I had a door in my bedroom that went into the basement. And then beside my bedroom, there was a staircase coming down from the main level of the house. And beside that was like kind of a den family area, and it had a door to the basement as well, and then there was a laundry room, and there was a basement, but that area beside my bedroom always felt like the darkest, deepest corner of the basement, and I was terrified of that corner. And I never saw anything. Again, I'm a skeptic, but I'm open-minded. I never saw anything, but I knew there was a man in that corner wearing a bowler hat. I didn't even know the word bowler hat at the time, because hats, but, you know, a round top, sort of thin brimmed hat, wearing an overcoat, standing in the corner of my room. I never saw him. I just knew he was there. And I'm not a very sensitive person. I've never experienced anything else. But I knew this guy was standing there, and it really disturbed me. I avoided that corner of my room like the plague. I had a fish tank, in the corner of that room for a little while. You know, like a, I don't know, 15-gallon, whatever the normal size standard fish tank is. And I kept having fish jump out of it and die on the floor. And it was covered on the top. It had a cover on it. There was no way for them to exit the fish tank. I never left the little feeding door open. And 4 or 5 times, I would come into my bedroom and find my fish on the floor, dead. One of them I didn't find for a week or so, because it was one of those like algae sucking eels that hide sometimes, and it had like gotten into the corner of the wall. I didn't notice it until it started smelling, but there was just something really malevolent about that corner that I was just never comfortable with. And so then I start having these dreams, you know, the sleep paralysis dreams, where you think you're awake, until you realize that you're not awake. And I'd be in my bed, and these always happened when I was sleeping with my face towards that wall. And I would just see, I could see her, I knew she was there. I could see this girl, and she was kneeling beside my bed. And I knew that it was Emily. I knew it was this girl from my memory that maybe never happened. Because I asked my parents about it, and I never was friends with Emily when I was younger. The playground in my memory is not a playground that I can remember ever going to. But I knew this girl was Emily, and her face was right there beside mine. It was like she was kneeling beside the bed, her face level with mine, and she was just looking at me. And I was terrified. This happened several times, many times. It would happen like once every 2 or 3 months. And I was just, God, it was really scary. But I felt like she was pissed at me. maybe because I was a teenager at that point and had stopped thinking about her. I had put my stuffed animal, Emily, in the closet. Partially because she was leaking stuffing. But I felt like she was kind of pissed at me. But also, in the dreams, there was always this figure behind her, this man. And so I got this dual sense that she wasn't very happy with me, but she was also keeping this man in the bowler hat in the corner away from me. And that persisted until I left and went to college. And one of my brothers has lived in that room since I left, and I've never heard anything from him, but I also haven't asked him. But I felt like these experiences were really more centered on me. The feeling I got from the man in the bowler hat was a very kind of predatory, sexual feeling, that I don't think he would direct towards boys. But I never, you know, I feel like she was mad at me, but she was protecting me in a way. So I don't know. I don't know what was happening. I feel crazy even talking about it. But that's my one and only experience. And since I left that room, I have never experienced anything else. So that's my story. Thanks for listening. Bye.
I'm weirded out by the fact that the fish can get out of the tank by itself with, like, defying laws of physics.
I don't think the fish were getting out by themselves.
No.
I think something was taking them out.
I don't think there, I mean, was the fish, you think something was opening the cover and getting them to jump out, or were they, like, teleporting the fish out of the tank?
No, I don't know, but I know somehow these fish were getting out and they weren't able to.
Sure.
But, I think it's a very, very strong couple of entities going on when she was a child, because she doesn't have experiences now.
Mm-hmm.
So for somebody that's not sensitive to be able to even tell you what these entities look like,
mm-hmm.
means that they were really, really strong.
Yeah, that she was picking up on him for not being a sensitive. Or could her sensibilities, I mean, sometimes we have that, where people are sensitive, but they learn to essentially not be so tuned into them.
It could be, but it just sounds like since she hasn't had anything else, mm-hmm. like nothing else,
yeah,
you know, maybe it was just that. It was just really strong.
Oh, I could see that. Thank you for sharing that that story with us. 855-853-4802, our number. Hi.
Hi, Tony and Jenny. I'm a recent listener of your show, and I've become really obsessed with it because it's really good. I had no idea that so many people have so many ghost stories all over the United States. So I just wanted to share with you my experiences that happened to me in a little house out in the country out in Virginia. The people that lived there were my boyfriend's parents, and we often went out to his house to hang out. And they certainly believed that the place was haunted due to faucets turning on and off. Doors would open on their own. File cabinets would open on their own. But one really interesting thing that happened was down in the basement, and this is where they believed the ghost lived, basically. It was down in the basement. And the basement had a pool table, so sometimes we would go down there and have parties and be quite noisy. And the basement was also very moist because there was a leaky water pipe. So they had painted the walls with kills, which is a paint that kills mold and prevents mold from growing. But eventually the mold grew back onto the walls, and a face came through, quite large, probably 2 feet by 2 feet. And it was an image of a man, and he had curly hair, shoulder length, and his face looked very ominous, and his brow was shadowed, and it just looked very demonic, honestly. So my occurrence that happened to me while I was in the house, we were upstairs in the kitchen area, and the basement door was through the kitchen, and we left it open because people were going in and out of the basement to the kitchen, different hangout spots. And we were around the table, the kitchen table. There must have been about 7 of us. And we were all carrying on and drinking and just being quite loud and obnoxious. And at one point, the door to the basement just slams shut. And everybody stops and stares at the door and then exchanges glances like they know there was something more, like the ghost had done it. So we went down in the basement to check and see if the bottom door was open, but it wasn't. So there was no sort of gust or anything that could make this happen. So we all concluded that it was the ghost, and he was angry at us for being loud and obnoxious. And when he slammed the door, it really felt like somebody was angry, and it gave you that anxious feeling. So that was my personal experience in the house. Eventually, they painted over the face that appeared in the basement, and I've lost the picture of it, but I haven't returned to that house since, and yeah, I just want to share my story, so thank you.
That's pretty strong to come through the kills.
Kills, yeah.
Gets rid of everything.
Including ghosts.
Yeah.
So is that the, I was always wondering what that kills, the kills in file, or is it just kills paint? The K-I-L-T-Z, is that?
It's K-I-L-Z.
L-Z, yeah. Uh-huh. I always see that brand. I never knew that that's what it actually.
It's like a primer. It goes over everything.
Okay.
And it's good for that case mold, but it also is really good for like animal smells that get trapped into the sheetrock.
Okay.
But I've never seen anything that, and of course, you know, I'm not an expert, but I've never seen anything kills wouldn't get rid of.
Sure. Well, there you go.
There you go.
Add it to the list. There you go. That wraps up today's episode of Real Ghost Stories Online. Thank you for the stories. Thank you for the calls. Of course, if you want to share, 855-853-4802 is our phone number. I'd love for you to help keep us on the air. Become an EPP, extra podcast person. Get access to all those bonus episodes. Binge on them throughout the weekend and enjoy. Sign up on the website, realghoststoriesonline.com. Click Become an EPP. Until next time, for Jenny Brewski, I'm Tony Brewski. Thanks for listening to another episode of Real Ghost Stories Online.